This is The Political Scene, a weekly conversation with New Yorker writers and editors about politics. It's Friday, February 26th. I'm Dorothy Wickenden, executive editor of The New Yorker. Last Tuesday, a federal judge ordered Apple to comply with an FBI request for help hacking into an iPhone belonging to one of the San Bernardino shooters. And Apple is challenging the demand. Yesterday, FBI Director James Comey testified before the House Intelligence Committee.
And I think our role is just to make sure folks understand what are the costs associated with moving to a world of universal strong encryption. Part of me thinks, that's great, I don't want anybody looking at my stuff. But then I step back and say, you know, law enforcement, which I'm part of, really does save people's lives, rescue kids, rescue neighborhoods from terrorists, and we do that a whole lot through court orders that are search warrants, and we do it a whole lot through search warrants of mobile devices.
Patrick Radden-Keefe is here to talk about the changing politics of balancing a government's duty to protect its citizens with citizens' rights to privacy. Welcome, Patrick.
Thank you.
Last week, the CEO of Apple, Tim Cook, wrote a letter to customers saying the U.S. government has asked us for something we simply do not have and something we consider too dangerous to create. What has the FBI asked for exactly?
Well, so the issue is if you have an iPhone or a smartphone and somebody else, for instance, wanted to get into it and it's password protected, if you have an iPhone, and this was actually something I didn't know until this story, if you enter the wrong passcode 10 times, it will essentially just automatically wipe the phone. This gave me some cause for alarm because I have a 3-year-old who loves nothing more than to sit there idly typing the wrong numbers into the touchpad. So the FBI, even if it were to try and do a brute force hack of the phone, where they just enter many, many, many different combinations in order to get into this phone, which had belonged to one of the San Bernardino attackers, the danger is that they would get it wrong 10 times and the phone would wipe. So what they've asked Apple to do is create software which will allow the FBI to brute force hack its way into the phone. Apple's concern is we have a system in place, even if you say it's just this one time, if we bring into the world a software patch that will allow you to route around the password, it's like Frankenstein, right? Once you've introduced that to the world, it can potentially be misused by the FBI. It can potentially fall into the wrong hands, and it sets a dangerous precedent legally for Apple. It's worth noting also that Apple has been cooperating with this specific investigation, and that when you have a phone that backs up to the cloud, that backup is encrypted, but Apple can access it. Apple doesn't need your code. So in this instance, they actually have already given the FBI access to all the information that was on that backup. It's just that it had only backed up, I think, 3 or 4 weeks prior to the attack. And so what the FBI is after is whatever might have been on the phone since that backup.
This is one of these impossible subjects where you can see both sides of the debate. So just getting down to basics, federal wiretapping law does require phone companies to make their data available, but not tech companies. Why is that?
The phone companies do have to make this data available, but if you think about a standard phone company, it's generally a much more limited amount of data. Whereas with smartphones, we have a huge amount on there. It's our photos, it's our personal messages, it's our bank information, our health information. There's a great wealth of data on a smartphone that you might not necessarily give to a standard old-fashioned phone company. And the Obama administration has not asked Congress to legislate that these tech companies should turn over all of this information to law enforcement. So you have a little bit of a vacuum right now in which there's no legislation on this. And the FBI, which is being aggressive and wants to get as much as it can in its law enforcement investigations, is pushing the envelope in this case.
A Washington Post editorial last week warned about authoritarian abuse. Is that overstating it? And obviously talking not just about this case, but about potential future cases.
I don't know that the fear here necessarily is of an Orwellian FBI, but you do have to look at this in a broader context. So say you were to create a system in which the U.S. government could oblige Apple to give them effectively a passcode. My first question would be, what happens when China goes to Apple and says, look, we want a similar deal? Not for Americans, but for Chinese citizens who have iPhones. What happens when Russia comes and says that to Apple? How strong is Apple's case in saying no to them when it said yes to the US? And then a second question would be, we know that hackers spend all day hacking quite successfully in many instances, the Department of Defense, the FBI, other U.S. government agencies. So there's another fear, which is that even if you trust the intentions of the FBI, do you trust their capabilities to keep such a master key safe in, just in their hands?
It's also interesting that the FBI chose the San Bernardino case, and that it's obviously not an accident. This is a time still when citizens are feeling incredibly vulnerable to domestic terrorism.
It's come out in recent days that this is not the only case right now in which the FBI is pushing for access to an iPhone. In fact, there are 8 or 10 cases around the country in which they're doing it. In many of those other cases, it's drug cases. It's more run-of-the-mill criminal cases. And so some people think that in some ways this is a perfect opportunity for James Comey, the FBI director, who has been pushing in congressional testimony and in public statements for over a year now to get more access and to weaken encryption, because he says that otherwise law enforcement might go dark, is his expression. And we could argue about whether or not that might actually happen, but I think there's no question that this is a great opportunity for them in highlighting this particular case, because people are inclined to be sympathetic.
I want to ask about your book, Chatter, which you wrote in 2005. This case does bring up other interesting issues, which you touched on in that book. This case is based on the All Writs Act of 1789, which in its current form was passed in 1911. And you pointed out in your book that the interception of communications is probably as old as communication itself. Tell us about how that worked way back at the beginning.
Going back centuries, and particularly with the advent of diplomacy, anytime anybody's trying to send a secret message, there's somebody else trying to intercept it. You have codes that go back over 1,000 years. I always think of sort of Shakespeare plays or Moliere plays with people hiding behind screens, overhearing conversations. Even if you think about the word eavesdrop, right? Where do we get that word? It's from the idea of somebody lurking beneath the eaves of a house.
That's fascinating. So how have the Snowden revelations about NSA mass surveillance and the terrorist attacks in Paris and San Bernardino changed the politics of the issue?
Well, this is one of the big ironies here, is that in some ways, I think this whole current story with Apple is for the federal government a lesson in unintended consequences. It was only after the Snowden revelations, when people around the world learned that U.S. tech companies had been secretly strong-armed into cooperating to a degree that many people thought was not happening with the NSA, and that even above and beyond that, the NSA was tapping into their cables and sort of hoovering up communications above and beyond what they had been given, that there was a big push in Silicon Valley towards stronger encryption. And so I think there is a sense in which in trying to negotiate this line between privacy and security, there was overreach on the part of the U.S. government, and that prompted a strong reaction by the tech community. And now we're seeing the fallout of that.
And we're also seeing the fallout in the presidential campaign. Hillary Clinton has said that it's a very hard dilemma. Bernie Sanders, that it has got to be a balance, which is essentially what Comey was saying. But interestingly, this is one kind of big government interference that the Republican candidates all support. So let's listen to what Senator Ted Cruz had to say last night during the Republican debate.
We should enforce the court order and find out everyone that terrorist in San Bernardino talked to on the phone, texted with, emailed, and absolutely Apple doesn't have a right to defy a valid court order in a terrorism investigation.
So Obama denounced Snowden's leaks, but he isn't pressing for legislation that would force Apple and other companies to decrypt phones. His Justice Department is going after Apple, but he isn't. Help us parse all of this.
That was an interesting piece in the Times, I guess it was over the weekend, about how Obama's personally torn on this. And I think in some ways, this may be emblematic of his leadership style, and you could argue maybe some of the weaknesses of his leadership style is that he's...
And his legalistic mind,
well,
where he
right,
sees
that he's
both
sort of
sides.
Very analytical, he can see both sides, and that in some instances, when there's not a right and obvious answer, he'll actually just kind of hesitate, which is, I think, what's happening here. Some people think that the solution is going to come in legislation, which might take the form of a new bill in Congress. It might also take the form of some kind of a panel or a committee to investigate this and bring in points of view from the public and private sector. And I read something the other day about this, which I thought was fascinating about the debate. From the point of view of the tech community, and particularly mathematicians, cryptographers, the idea here is that you're not actually going to be able to negotiate an answer in the middle. That if there's an answer in the middle, in fact, strong cryptography has lost. Once Apple has created the workaround, then that workaround will eventually fall into other people's hands and the cryptography really won't be strong anymore. And so somebody likened it to climate change and said that when people say, look, we need to strike a balance and we need to kind of come up with a negotiated solution here, that's like saying teach the debate. They'll actually win to the extent that they're able to introduce this uncertainty. Whereas, at least from the point of view of the people who design encryption systems, you need to take kind of an absolute stance and say, no, even Apple shouldn't be able to get in. And indeed, just in recent days, it's come out that Apple is, even as this debate is happening, designing a new operating system, which will be impossible even for Apple to get into.
And presumably all of the Silicon Valley companies are standing in line with Tim Cook.
That mostly seems to be the case. And what they are doing is writing friend of the court briefs in support of Apple. There was a little bit of uncertainty there where Bill Gates appeared to come out and side with the FBI, but then walked back.
Yeah, what was that all about?
Well, he was asked about it, I think, in a kind of impromptu setting. And he initially came out and said, look, this is just one phone. And of course, Apple could technically access the information. And then when asked about it the next day, he appeared to walk that back and said, we got to strike a balance.
Both Apple and the FBI called on Congress to mediate this week, hence Comey's testimony. It seems like an odd savior to call on. I mean, isn't that just a recipe for stalemate? What does each side hope to gain?
That's a tricky one. I don't know. Apple's position is in some ways a fairly absolutist one. But having said that, if they lose the legal battle, they will comply. I don't think it's a situation in which they're ultimately going to go to prison over this. The Justice Department suggested that this is all kind of a marketing strategy. That's cynical, but it's not entirely untrue. It's part of Apple's brand that they offer strong security. So I think they need to fight this. But if they lose, either in the courts or in the form of new legislation that mandates that they create a backdoor, then I think they probably will comply.
So which side are you on?
I come down with Apple. It's interesting, Mike Hayden, the former head of the NSA and the CIA, has actually come out and said he sides with Apple on this. But then he also said, if I were sitting where James Comey sits, I'd have James Comey's point of view. And you can understand that part of the way in which these issues, I think, get negotiated in our society is that there isn't going to be a strong civil libertarian instinct on the part of the FBI director. The FBI director is going to go out and push and push and push. You then hope that you can kind of array all of the, you know, you have Apple, you have civil society, you have privacy groups, and everybody can duke it out and come to an arrangement that probably nobody will be 100% happy with. But that's the nature of these issues.
Okay. Thanks so much, Patrick.
Thank you.
Patrick Redden Keefe is a staff writer at The New Yorker and a senior fellow at the Century Foundation. His first book was Chatter, Dispatches from the Secret World of Global Eavesdropping. This has been The Political Scene from The New Yorker. This podcast is produced by Alex Barron for NewYorker.com. I'm Dorothy Wickenden.
You can subscribe to this and other New Yorker podcasts in the iTunes Store. You can find past episodes of The New Yorker Out Loud, The Political Scene, and The New Yorker's fiction and poetry podcasts at newyorker.com/podcast. The weekly audio edition of The New Yorker is available at audible.com.